people and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
That's right. It's another edition of Shift and Steer. We're here in the studio today, and today we got a really special treat because we have someone in the studio with us.
Me.
No, not you, Matt. Hey, just to go through the introductions, I'm Brad Fanshawe, and right across from me is...
I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea.
You remembered it this week. That's good.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, but our in-studio guest is none other than Jed Coughlin Jr. I mean, pro stock driver. You've been doing it forever, man. I mean,
6 NHRA championships, yep. 76 victories, right? 58 as a pro. Ranking you as the 4th all-time pro stock category. Congratulations.
He's 9th across all categories. So you take everybody's wins. But what is impressive, Jake, is now what's funny is my wife pointed this out to me. So what you guys got to understand, I tried to talk her into coming in and sitting in on just the front, but she wouldn't do it. She's microphone shy. But when we used to be involved in sponsorship with some drag cars and like that with Prudhomme, she gets very involved, and so she is stuck with it, and she'll be sitting there watching TV, and I'll be walking through on my way to the shop or something, and she'll go, he needs X amount of wins, so many rounds, and he'll be in the shootout. And I mean, she's got it down. Just
wow, Charlotte's the statistician
she
over there.
She is, and she told me when I told her that you were coming in, she goes, you know what's really impressive is that he has won from every position.
Yeah.
And I said, oh really? And she goes, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter where you put Jiggy. I mean, he's gonna go out there and win. And that is an impressive stat that whether you qualified first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, all the way down, you won. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been very cool. You know, I've been blessed. Had an amazing career thus far, and been surrounded with some great people. You know, that's what it's all about. And pro stock racing has been a great career for me, and I got to work with my family quite a bit. My father, Jeg, was my crew chief for probably the first, 3 or 4 championships that you mentioned at the head of the show, and he was just a mastermind to work with, and helping the guys navigate the car and the setups, and a great sounding board for me as a driver. You know, so it's like I said, it's just been a fun ride here. Getting ready to open up the 2018 season here in Pomona, just down the road. It's great to be here in the studio and wrap with you guys. So we're just getting ready to kick it off and hopefully have another banner year.
That's great.
How many people are named Jag in your family, and how many are named Troy? These are the big questions.
Well, there's definitely 3 Jags.
There's quite a few, all right?
Officially, there's only 2 Jags. My father was born James Edward, and his parents nicknamed him Jag after James Edward. James, his name, okay. Edward, his father, and Genevieve, his mother, at birth, right on the back of the picture.
That's where it came from, right? That's where it sort of started.
That's where it came from.
Then they just decided everybody had one syllable, right? Jag, Troy. We're done.
John, Mike. So, it's just everyone knows him as Jeg, other than Uncle Sam, and he knows him as Jeg and James Edward, I'm sure. So, it's been a neat name. And, as we've traveled the country and done what we've done in the last 20 years in the professional side of racing, now there's a lot of dogs and cats and birds out there named Jeg. And there's actually even a couple of young boys, and some of them are well in their teens now that families have named their sons Jeg. So that's pretty cool, and an effort that I probably should pull together and will pull together at some point in time, little reunion of Jegs.
There you go.
Kind of fun.
But you also have there's the business as well. I mean, Jegs is a huge online catalog. We go there and shop all the time from that kind of stuff. Who participates in the business side of it and versus the racing side of it? Do you dabble in both in the off season or like, on your way to the track this weekend, you're going to answer in customer service emails?
Well, there's, we've been involved in the business, fortunately, since we were kids. Our father, Jeg, always kind of suggested that maybe we go out and try something else. But I still say that was just a subliminal effort, because 4 boys growing up around a motorsports family, his last ride was a Top Fuel Dragster in the late 70s. I'm the youngest of 4, and my oldest brother got into working at Jeg's and then racing later, and it just kind of stair-stepped down at the appropriate times. And I've had a ball working in the business. I've worked just about every area of it, you know, from probably the mid-'80s to today. And the four of us have owned the business since the late 80s now. And have kind of owned and operated it from that angle. But it's something we're very passionate about, much like y'all are in the automotive world. And we spend a lot of time doing it. We've got some great people, you know, back at the JEGS headquarters in Delaware, Ohio, that we work with day in and day out. And our goal is to service our, you know, millions of packages a year that our customers are happy on the other end. And
getting those packages out is amazing. I mean, I got to pay a visit to your place.
Okay.
Came out for a summer barbecue. You had it out in the parking lot. And now the funny story about this, there's a side story around it. I was first impressed by the robotic picking of the orders. I mean, the way that thing, Matt, you imagine these ceilings. How tall are the ceilings in that warehouse?
Well, where the robotics are is about 35 feet, but the V&A is about almost 60 feet tall.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. But these robots, the guy sits in a little console, and where you or I would go down, and we'd have this piece of paper, we'd go, okay, we got to pull part number 5, Edelbrock manifold or whatever, and you'd go pull it, and you'd put it in the bin, you'd pull that order. This robot's pulling multiple orders at a time. It's going up, it's down, across, and it's amazing. It comes back, the bins go down, and the people put it in boxes and away it goes.
Yeah, I saw Wall-E.
Yeah,
I saw
exactly.
the Pixar movie. I know how it works. I saw that little guy running around, grabbing all the packages.
But but it was really cool. But the side story that's really funny, I got to tell you guys, is I have a couple guys that work for me here, and born and bred Californian, and, you know, one of them had been to Vegas. One of them had been, you know, but they'd never really been to the Midwest. So it's like middle of summer. We come out. I think we were back there. We had our booth at the Good Guys event. And
gotcha.
So we came up, and right next to your place was this big cornfield. Well, you know, I went to high school and college in Nebraska. So to me, cornfield, no big deal. But Rick and Mike are back there with me, and I'm talking to a bunch of the guys from JEGS, and all of a sudden I said, what happened to Rick and Mike? Where'd these guys go? And all of a sudden one of your guys goes, the two guys over there that are just standing staring at the cornfield. And
nice.
I mean, first it was we drove through that town that looks like it's out of a movie set, you know.
Yep.
Looks like any town USA. And then we got there, and the corn was high. And, you know, you can imagine Rick. I mean, Rick's 6'5", and it was like, you know, over his head. And they were just mesmerized because they literally said to me, they go, we didn't think it really looked like this. It's, you know, I mean, this is the Midwest.
Rick, I get. Rick's a designer here, but Michael Anthony's with Van Halen is posted. How has he not traveled
not
all over?
Not that Mike. Not
oh, okay.
Michael.
I was like, what Mike are we talking about?
No, a different guy.
Okay.
So, you guys are, I mean, you're right dab in the Midwest. And, I mean, when did your dad start the business? In the 60s?
Yeah, 1960.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Yeah.
And so, as you said, you guys grew up around it.
Yep.
Now, your dad, he was a racer himself. He raced Top Fuel, AA Gas, Top Alcohol also, right?
Yeah, he's pretty much raced everything in the linear path of the sport, in the 50s all the way up through 1980. And then came back and raced a little bit of the sportsman racing, Lucas Oil Series racing with us in the, I guess it would be late 80s, real early 90s. I ran some Super Gas and Super Street just to, I guess, enjoy the racing, and we could race as a family, and we had some fun doing that. And then he kind of hung up his helmet pretty much for good about that time, early 90s.
And that's what's amazing about you guys. I mean, yourself included, being that a lot of guys, they get in one thing, you know, one type of car. That's
right.
What they race their whole career. And you've been in so many different types of cars. How does that do you feel that's really an advantage because you know how all the other classes run or what?
Man, I don't know. It's, being the youngest of four, there's always been a lot of race cars in the shop. And we kind of have a shop rule amongst the family that, the keys are always on the dash. So if something's sitting idle for the weekend and you got the urge, you can maybe take it to one of the events, a local bracket race or NHRA event. And I always enjoyed, you know, racing in multiple cars, multiple classes. It takes different disciplines and different focuses, and I think that's something that I thrived on, that challenge, and I've been fortunate to do well in many of the classes that I've raced in, you know, still today, going at it pretty hot and heavy in the pro stock world. Haven't done a whole lot of bracket racing. It'll be about 2 years, which is the longest span. But I remarried about 5 or 6 years ago, and Samantha and I had a little girl, Carly, who's 3 years old. And so a lot of my extra weekends have been filled having fun with the family in lieu of, you know, going extra racing. So,
yeah.
Then I also have a 20-year-old son, Jake the Third, who's at Ohio State, plays golf for he's a sophomore and plays golf for Ohio State. So a lot of fun chasing him around.
So he's just driving a different type of thing.
He's definitely driving it.
Yeah.
Got a great head on his shoulders playing that sport very well.
Well, anybody that goes out and visits a JAG race team, whatnot, just remember the keys are on the dash.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
I did. There was a little asterisk in there that said families.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And it has to be sitting idle. You know.
Yeah. I was just checking.
We've amassed some really cool cars, and Scott Woodruff Woody's been great at helping us showcase these cars. Our mezzanine area up in our shop, we've probably got 15, 16 cars that we've either won championships with in the past that have not, if not fully, they're real close to being fully restored and even race ready. So, but everything's cataloged up there nicely with signs and looking pretty cool. Looks like a little museum. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's fun to just go up and
as everybody's listening to this show, we would have. It's past the weekend. We passed the Winter Nationals already, but
Jake's already won his first race of the year.
Congratulations!
Yeah, hey, thank you.
Congratulations! tell us about the hot rod that you got out there this weekend.
Well, it's actually looking really good. I race for a team from Oklahoma, Elite Motorsports. Richard Freeman's our team owner. Races Chevy Camaro in Pro Stock, about 1,400 horsepower in the 500 cubic inch fuel injected motor, all naturally aspirated, no power adder in the Pro Stock world. You know, we go 0 to 60 in about a second and 0 to 200 in just over 6 seconds. So it's quite a ride. There's a lot going on from behind the wheel. You know, once you've got the car properly staged and on the rev limiter and the tree fires yellow to turn green and you're letting the clutch out and accelerating at like 3.5 G's, you know, you're shifting about every second, the first 4 seconds. And it's not a shift where you have to push the clutch back in. It's just a vertical gate shifter that drops from first down to second into third, fourth, and then fifth. But that first 4 seconds of the run, a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, these cars are, they're on the ragged edge, like any motorsport. You know, so they're not always going perfectly straight or, you know, staying to the track as you'd hope they would. So sometimes there's some input from the steering wheel. And, you know, in a drag race, if you're going to mess up any part of the racetrack, you want to mess up the last foot, not the first foot, with
right.
acceleration. But really looking forward to the season. I think we've got some great cars. Kind of shifted some stuff around at Elite Motorsports. Rick and Ricky Jones, father-son duo out of Rick Jones Race Cars, are crew chiefing both Erica's and my car cooperatively, along with Mark Ingersoll and Brian Self, who work on the Gas Monkey car and Mountain View Tire car. The focus will be coming out of Rick and Ricky, and made some improvements on the chassis toward the tail end of the 17 season. Consistency was really getting pretty strong, and our off-season testing here has been really good. So we're looking to, you know, add to that statement you just made and win this Winter Nationals upcoming.
Now you said you're at Wild Horse Pass over in Phoenix doing your testing like a lot of the teams. Now, it's really good when you can do that and come over here and have virtually the same weather. I know that a lot of times you go over there and Phoenix is a lot milder than you come over here, and it probably makes it a lot easier, doesn't it, for your crew chief and everything?
It does, yeah, for a couple of reasons. One, it is similar. We are a little more elevated there, so the barometer isn't quite as sharp or can be not as sharp as it is here in L.A., but you know, we also race there in 3 weeks, so it gives us some good on-track data for when we return after, you know, the season opener in the Winter Nationals here in Pomona, then a week off, and then right back to Wild Horse Pass. So I think it serves as a duo for us where we can get some on-track testing for the start of the season, and then also not only prepare for that, but also for the second event of the season, which returns right there.
You know, I had on my other show recently, just this past week, I had Ron Capps come in, and we were talking about it, and then we said we were going to come over here and do a show with you as well. And we were talking about the driving. We were talking about getting in the car and the shifting you were talking about. And Capps said, you got to do a lot more work in your car than he has to do in his now, because now he's a little bit more kind of get in and hold on for life. There's not a lot of shifting or anything going on. He said the only tough part for him is the amount of pedal movement on the throttle is only about 1.5 to 2 inches. So, you know, that's really about it. So you're either off the throttle or kind of off throttle. As far as like sort of pedaling in between, he said that you really have to get a feel for it. But other than that, he said you got a lot more work in the car.
There might be, but I'm telling you, I got a respect for the Top Fuel and Funny Car pilots.
He's boogieing, man.
They got a little sidecar to keep their stuff in, because they've got a lot of guts, without question. I mean, they're going 0 to 300 in 300 miles per hour in 3 seconds, and you know, there's just so much that can happen there. And as a fan of the sport, you know, you're watching from the stands or watching on TV, and you know what's going to happen. I mean, that element of surprise is always there, and that's obviously, those two classes I've never participated in. I've had some great opportunities too, but quite frankly, just never. You know, I knew it wasn't for me, and I couldn't give it 100%. Honestly, because of the fear factor. So, you know, we've had a lot of fun. I had a ton of fun watching my father race Top Fuel as a kid. You know, they were going 0 to 250 at that time, and we were fortunate as kids to be able to work on the car at our skill levels at the time, and the nitro is definitely in the blood, but it's probably not going to happen in my
life. Two different worlds, definitely, isn't it? Yeah.
It's funny because we've spoken to Larry Dixon's a friend for a long time, Melanie Troxell as well, and Ron Capps, and you know, you see it. It's so dramatic that when you launch these cars, what you guys do in all the classes, it's how hard it launches, and you feel like that's the most intense part of it. And when you start talking about how many G's do you pull, and Melanie and Ron were both saying, they're like, oh yeah, you pull 8 G's off the line, but 15 when you hit the chutes at the end.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, okay, so now I was like, how do you not get that concussion, that Will Smith concussion in his football movie where your head's rattling around, you know, because you're just launching. And then 2 seconds later, 3 seconds later, a couple seconds later, you're just at the end. Just at the end, hitting the brakes and launching the chutes, and you must get
How many
rattled.
G's do you think a guy jumping out of a plane when he hits that chute?
Yeah, but he doesn't do it several times every weekend.
Good point. Good 20 point.
20 times.
But I mean, Ron's told me, I mean, you know, way back when he was racing for Snake, he told me, he goes, I remember, he goes, it took me, I think it was 10, 12 runs before I could ever tell him how the car was reacting. He goes, I was just along for the ride, man. You know, I mean, but how have you seen, I mean, pro stock change? I mean, because since you've been involved, you know, we've seen the whole sport change so dramatically, but
absolutely,
I've always been a huge fan of pro stock. I mean, back in the Rare Morrison days and, you know, Glidden and you know, Grumpy Jenkins and all those guys. But, I mean, you know, I mean, it's changed in so many ways from the cars, how they're set up and how they used to have Lencos and everything. And now, I mean, even to the rigs. I mean, everybody used to pull up and you were a hotshot if you had a Chaparral, you know, tag along, you know. And
enclosed ramp truck.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Now, the class, the sport itself, as you mentioned, has grown just tremendously. Obviously, with the digital age and the now world, everything is right at our fingertips. So, but pro stock in particular, you know, it's been fun to see the linear path of the sport, as we just mentioned, from ramp trucks and, you know, 68 Camaros on the back of it to, you know, full-on semi-rigs with, you know, decked out with all the latest and greatest technology and parts to back up an effort. You know, but I think fast forward into 2018, the NHRA has proposed a new rule for the class this year where it will allow any engine to run in any make body car. So you could put a Chevy in a Ford or a Ford in a Dodge, any way you so choose. And I think that's an effort to, you know, continue to allow new competitors to come into the sport without having to have that multi-million-dollar engine development budget. Certainly, there hasn't been a whole lot of development on the Ford side. Chrysler with the Dodge and the Hemi, they were very involved up until the kind of the fuel injection era, which they're very excited about, but the 10,500 max rev limit kind of hampered the current Hemi design. So I think this new engine rule hopefully will help you know, over time, over the next year or so, you know, get some new body styles out there on the racetrack, so we can hopefully create that rivalry like we grew up watching between, you know, Sox and Martin and Grumpy Jenkins and Bob Flynn, et cetera.
And you brought up the fuel injection. I mean, that was a huge change for Pro Stock when they went from naturally aspirated, you know. And do you feel that pretty much across the all the teams that's worked out now and everybody's back in the competitive?
Anyone, most of our listeners here, if they had a choice between digital or analog, they would certainly go the digital way in most walks of life. And fuel injection obviously has been a proven technology for 30 plus years, and there's very few things you can buy today without a fuel injected system in it to provide. So yes, it's been fantastic for Pro Stock. The engine our engines are much more in much more harmony. They're happier. We're making more power with them. The only reason we don't see the scoreboards better than they were 3 years ago is there was a max rev limit where we were running 11.2, 11.3, 11,200 through the finish line and through the gears to down to 10,500. That was a big that was probably the biggest transition in the new rules package 2 years ago that probably hampered us the most.
And going into this season, where are you with the rules? Are you satisfied?
Yeah. I'm pretty happy with them.
It seems to be a lot of talk, a lot of debate about stuff. Let's talk about budgets. Battle of the budgets. What's your feeling on that? So, are budgets? Do you feel like they're capped at a certain point? That feels good. Are budgets limiting the amount of teams we can get out there, or does it feel like budgets are what wins? How do you?
Because
a lot of racing is really just kind of battle of the budgets. I mean, look at. Anything, Indy, F1,
And it's not much different in drag racing as well, be it any of the professional classes for that matter. Your solid funded teams, well sponsored teams certainly have more monies to work with. And of course the research and development and then obviously the winning side of the research and development makes its way to the track. That's definitely, that's been a big part of motorsports and in drag racing in particular. The team I'm with right now, Elite Motorsports, we've got four different teams that are operating out of the Oklahoma shop of Elite Motorsports.
Yeah, it's a big operation.
It's a very big operation, and kind of reminds me of our family operation in the late 90s, early 2000s when we ran two Pro Stock cars and two Pro Stock trucks. I mean, it's just always a constant flow of R&D going on, whether it be chassis side or engine development side. And I can tell you there's very few stones unturned and a lot of effort that goes into trying to build more power, build more efficient power, and then obviously get out and have the crew chiefs wave their wand on the power management side and get it down the racetrack. But back to the budget thing, I think, with some of the new rules that have come in, the fuel injection, the 10.5, and now the any engine in any body style, I think will help kind of keep some of the costs down. The 10.5 rule already is starting to show some friendliness there, as for sure the fuel injection. So I think Pro Stock in particular is in a pretty good spot. I think we've got some transitions with these rules coming about that it's been a ship that's set sail for 25, 30 years in a certain path, and it's not going to turn overnight. So it's exciting. We've got great backing with the Coca-Cola Company and Mellow Yellow in particular in the drag racing world. So I think things are pretty exciting in the NHRA right now.
Now, along those lines, you brought up the multi-car teams. I know in the fuel categories, that's really important because they can extrapolate all the data and everything. Is it equally as important in Pro Stock to be able to share that data, and how much do you get?
Absolutely. After every run is completed, the NHRA provides us with a data sheet that tells exactly where each car was in 60 feet and 330, et cetera, and even the increments in between. So we learn a ton off of those sheets just in how efficient we were. And then when you look at four different sets of race pack data on our computers in front of the crew chiefs, they can pinpoint areas on the track that we need to, maybe we can be a little more aggressive on gearing. Maybe we need to do something differently with the shocks in this area because the bump in this lane over versus that lane. So that's another point too. With four cars, there's a good chance not all four of you are in the same lane every run. So
right.
That allows you to multiply your data and your mindset each and every run down the track. So and then come Sunday, that's game day. That's kind of everyone's on their own then, and the crew chiefs still, of course, use the data across the board to try and improve each car for the next round. But it's the multi-car teams, like in any sport, certainly have their benefits, and of course there's the distractions with it too. But that's up to the leaders of the teams to keep those to a minimal.
Yeah. Well, let me plant this seed in your head. Where do you think drag racing is going to be in 5 or 10 years, or where would you like it to be? Think about that for a second, because I know drag racing is on Brad's bucket list, but you know what else should be on your bucket list, Brad?
Are you talking about a big trip?
A trip to one of the greatest spectacles of motorsports, the Indy 500.
Oh, I thought you meant the Indy 500.
That's right, the Indy 500. It's not just any trip, but it's the ultimate Indy 500 fan experience. And that's exactly what AMSOIL, maker of some of the best synthetic motor oils on the planet, is giving away this spring. One grand prize winner will win a trip of a lifetime to the Indy 500 to watch some of the fastest cars and best drivers battle to have their names etched alongside the greats like Foyt, Andretti, Unser, and Castroneves. But that's not all. Listen to what else you get. As the grand prize winner, you get pit access. You get dinner with an Indy 500 legend. You get VIP track access. Suite access to watch the race. You get $1,000 in cash. You can spend it on whatever you want, Brad.
Well, we talked about this last show.
You can't go.
They need to spend it on us because they're going to send us as hosts.
We're not allowed to go. You're going to get round trip
airfare
for two, to and from Indy. You're going to get hotel accommodations for two people for 5 nights at a hotel near the Speedway, which is going to be fantastic. You could smell it. You could feel it. You could taste it in the air. You're going to get ground transportation to and from the airport, the hotel, the lobby, the Speedway, everything. You're going to meet a bunch of the drivers. It's going to be a lot of fun. So just like they did when making high-performance synthetic motor oils, AMSOIL went the extra mile with this sweepstakes. And if that's not enough, 10 first-place winners will receive a free digital download code for Monster Energy Supercross, the official video game.
That's right.
I haven't been in a long time to Supercross. When was the last time you've been?
Last year. I didn't make it this year, yeah.
You didn't go. But it's great, right?
Yeah, I rode the track. It was good.
All right. Well, now you can actually for real with the video game. So to do that, enter the AMSOIL Ultimate Indy 500 Fan Experience. Text Indy, I-N-D-Y, to 41487. That's Indy to 41487. Or visit AMSOIL.com/
You're Indy. Eligible. You're
okay.
Eligible,
yeah,
Jake.
You're
hey,
yeah,
and the thing
right
is
now.
Is that everybody, you got to go do this right away because – you know, you're going to turn around and all of a sudden the contest's going to be over and you go, damn it, I missed it. I'm not going to be there. $1,000 cash. You get to go. I mean, we said this last week, is that it's not just one of these trips where you just, you know, go in on Friday night and you're out on Saturday afternoon, which would be really a bummer with the Indy 500 because you'd miss the whole event. But you do go in, you get to enjoy, you get a dinner and you get, you know, pit
that'll
access and everything. It'll be really
it'll
cool.
Be fun. So. I haven't been. It should be good. I had an opportunity to go and we missed it. And
well, I told you the story about when we sponsored Robbie Gordon and I couldn't go because I had to go overseas, and I come back and sent two of my sales guys, and there they are standing in the pits waving.
Hey,
on
Mom,
TV, you know, and I'm going, that could have been me. What did I do? Why do I always send other people?
You went to go like sell watches in Europe or something.
Yes, and I went to make money so that they could be there. So anyways, but back to drag racing,
okay.
Away from the round circle
now,
race.
Is there something that well, what do you expect to see? Is there something that you want to happen? Is there something significant that needs to change? Engines, superchargers, aero, safety, like...
What did you say, 5 years from now?
5 years from now.
Okay, so aside from 5 back-to-back Pro Stock championships,
well, that's a given.
What else?
Well, that would be nice, yes, no question. I think looking, you know, over the hood 5 years for an HRA in the drag racing world, you know, it's certainly becoming a more readily... With media, it's that's becoming more readily available on all of our personal devices, phones, and tablets. I think that's a great opportunity for our sport to capitalize on, like many other major sports are, and we have as well. But I think there's some great opportunity there. And I think as far as the competition, the on-track side of it, I think we'll see, Fords and Chevys and Dodges and potentially Toyotas and other makes making their way into the pro stock world, which I think will be very exciting as well. I think that will build the rivalries, in our case, in the pro stock, will build the rivalries back in at the fans sitting in their seats or their fans and around the world sitting on their couches taking in the shows. So, I think there's a very bright future for the sport, and we've got a great format with the way the television has been produced. I think the digital side of things will continue to improve over time, and I think that will bring the opportunity to more people right in their own handheld devices to be able to, be a part of the sport, feel the sport, watch the sport.
Yeah.
There's no, like the Indy 500 we were talking about, that's on my bucket list as well. It's an event I haven't been to, but
you can go. You just text this code right here.
Trust me, I was pounding away on my phone as you were talking about it. So, I'm entering the fray with the rest of our listeners, but,
well, you're right. I think technology is going to play a big part in how we get more fans and the next generation of fans.
Yeah.
And maybe this weekend you should Snapchat one of your runs. I don't know if you can hold on and hit the record button at the same time, but if you could snap a run, that would be it. Maybe Instagram a story while you're doing it. I'm sure that would be great. I'm sure somebody would yell at you for doing that.
It's all part of the opportunity and just bringing the our stage to more and more folks, and
but we could always tape Woody to the hood, and he could do it.
We're testing. He's got cameras on the side.
You sell that good race tape, right? It'll hold him on.
Absolutely, yeah. It's not called 200 mile an hour tape for nothing.
That's right.
You know, this is a little off topic, but I know you've got a bunch of trophies at home and Wally's at home and accolades. But one that I thought was actually kind of fun. You have an Olympic torch.
Yeah.
How do you get one of those?
Well, I was kind of long story short, was invited to carry the torch on behalf of Chevrolet, who has a big part in the Olympic Games, and I discarded the information that came in. I thought this just looks like normal. 89% of your mail ends up in the round file, unfortunately. But and then I got a call from the motorsports director, and he's like, "Did you happen to get any paperwork for?" The torch and the upcoming Olympics. And so fast forward, had the opportunity to carry the torch for the Utah Games and Salt Lake Games. And it was great. I mean, it was proud to be.
And you got to keep the thing, too.
I got to keep
That's
the torch,
cool.
Which was very cool. Proud to be an American moment without question. And, I've been. Since birth, it seems like I've been a big fan of the Olympics and cheering on Team USA and had a lot of fun. It was quite an honor to carry that.
Now, there's a big question hanging out there,
Yeah.
Did you have to carry it farther than a quarter mile?
I don't think it was. It was just shy of a quarter mile, so I think they were targeting that. Yeah, it took a minute or two.
You should have insisted at least a quarter mile and then asked for your time slip. And
I understand. It was, cold January morning. I think it was like January 2nd or 3rd and, sub-zero temperature.
100 feet would have been too much for me then.
That seems like a pretty special moment, though. I'm a big fan of the Olympics as well. I love watching the Olympics. Yep. And having an opportunity like that, and you're like, what do you do? And then I imagine you're like, I hope I don't drop it. I hope it doesn't blow out. Like, there's some things that are out of your control. Probably makes you a little bit nervous. And then they're like, run.
Yep. It
seemed like it would be fun.
It was very seamless. You just receive the flame from the previous runner. And I think I was like the second or third runner of the day. And then as you approach your finish line, you light the next torch and
that's pretty cool.
Runner does their thing. So
running with a flame is probably the only way you're going to get me out to Colorado in the winter. I'm just not a winter person. No, not at all.
I understand. Well, being a Midwesterner, we were right at home doing it, and we were certainly proud to do it.
Now, your wife also gets behind the wheel, I heard.
Yeah.
So in both now she's driven both Pro Gas and
Super Gas.
Super Gas. That's what, yeah.
Super Gas and Super Comp. Samantha, yeah, she's quite an athlete. Grew up in Canada. So we do have that rivalry in hockey and now the Olympics a little bit. But
does she give you any driver tips once in a while?
Just, you know, I've learned quite a bit from her. She's a yoga instructor. And,
there you go.
There's quite a bit in the power of the mind, without question, you know, to be able to remain focused and disciplined. And, you know, as we age.
Flexibility getting in as you get older around that cage and everything?
Definitely. I'm a student in her class every Tuesday night. Back in Dublin, Ohio. But, yeah, she's a great racer. She grew up on skates. Excuse me. Was an ice dancer for, you know, made her way up to toward the Canadian national team and got out of skating at that point. And her family was into racing. Her father, Al Kenny, a world champion in Supercomp here in the NHRA, and brother, a multi-time division champ in Supercomp, Supergas. So it's in her blood. And yeah, she won a major event at Norwalk a couple
That's
of
great.
Years ago in Supercomp, and then made it all the way to the eighth and final round at the U.S. Nationals, our granddaddy of them all, just this past Labor Day weekend in Supergas. So she's quite the athlete, has quite the mindset, and so with our three-year-old daughter coming up with two racing parents, I'd say
I bet.
We can see the writing on the wall there already.
Yeah, I can imagine. And that's cool because it also gives her perspective into what you actually do. You know,
yeah.
When she's been behind the wheel herself, she can really relate to it. And that's probably unique. I mean, I know that in drag racing, I mean, you know, hanging around it and it's kind of like when you guys are together, it becomes like this one big family and group.
Yeah.
And there are some of the wives that have been involved or their families were. And,
yeah.
You know, but when your wife actually drives, that's pretty cool.
No, it's made for a great relationship, without question, because of that understanding and that passion and that drive and knowing the time constraints it takes or some of the mental challenges. So, we've made a great team at it on and off the track.
Yeah, no, that's great. Hey, now, I saw a car online that I want to ask you about. It was a yellow Jegs Vega with an LSX motor in it.
Wait a minute, it was yellow?
It was yellow.
That's
Can
weird.
You believe
what?
That? I know. But it.
You sure
now,
it's this Jegs?
Now, that was a cool little car because, see, I have a soft spot for Vegas because I have a Baldwin Motion Vega myself. And so whenever I see a really nice one, I kind of go, okay, what's this all about?
Yep.
Was that in any way, was just a project or was it paying homage to your dad's old Pro Stock Vega or what?
No, it was my brother Mike. He's kind of our avid car enthusiast and car collector of the family.
Okay.
Mainly all domestic, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, even some newer stuff. But he decided he wanted to work on a Vega project and kind of that's what it turned out to be. And it was one fast short wheelbase car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they got done with it.
No, it was cool. And that LSX motor, I mean, you know, that thing puts out so much power. But it was cool to see one, Matt, that wasn't just another pro street car, you know. I mean, you know, because every Vega you see is practically got, you know, 33 stuffed under it and narrowed rear end, and that one just looked like it was set up a little bit more for touring or pro touring, and yeah, really cool. It was well put together. I just saw a couple photos of it, and I was like, okay, I got to ask him about that. It's cool.
Yeah,
you don't even know what a Vega is, do you?
It's an old car.
It's an old car. It's not a Euro Vega.
I've seen pictures of your
my Baldwin Motion car.
Yeah, your Starsky and Hutch car.
My Starsky and Hutch car.
Is that the one? It's the red and the white.
Yeah, the Baldwin cars had the
it's
the stripe
your Starsky
down.
And Hutch. See, I totally know what you're talking
Starsky
about.
Starsky and Hutch stole it from them, though.
That's probably true, though. That's probably true. So you're going into Winter Nationals this weekend again. Hopefully you guys were out there. People listening went out there and watched the race. But what's next on the schedule for those that don't know?
Yep. Yeah, our schedule serpentines the U.S. Starts here in Pomona, works its way around the country and ends here in Pomona 24 races later in November. But we leave here, head to Phoenix couple weeks later, then to Gainesville, Florida. It's kind of working our way around the warmer parts of the country as spring starts to
follow the Sun Belt,
spring,
right?
Exactly. And, you know, we'll make our way across most of the major markets in the country, you know, from you know, Norwalk, Ohio is one of our big races now. Mm-hmm. We'll be in Chicago. We'll be in Bristol, Tennessee, Charlotte twice. We do the four wide in Charlotte and traditional two-lane racing in Charlotte both. The same in Las Vegas. We'll do the first ever four wide in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Bruton Smith and his team have expanded the Vegas platform to four lanes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
They're doing that as we speak.
Two of them aren't paved yet, so
yeah, they're just dirt roads.
It's a little bumpy.
Depends on what your draw is.
Yeah, they took the existing lanes up and redoing all four of the lanes at the same time. So we'll race four wide there here in April, I believe, and then in the countdown, the second to last race will be the traditional, side by side racing as the sport is seen. And yeah, and the four wide's pretty cool, I got to tell you.
Because two wasn't loud enough.
No, when you got four Top Fuel cars, four cars of any sort on the racetrack at one time, I mean it's just sensory overload.
Yeah. I haven't seen it live, but even watching it on TV, you know, when they first started doing it, the camera guy's a little bit like, I don't know how to shoot this yet. Like, it's kind of got to go back a little further, and it's impressive for sure. I'm sure it's more of just like a fun thing to do or to try. But
well, from a driver standpoint, there's definitely some complexities that you have to have in mind. In fact, it caught me several years into this format, and it just got caught off my game a little bit, and the staging procedure can cause an issue. But back to the racing itself, though, I mean, the blimp vision view, shooting down on top of the four lanes and seeing all four cars accelerate at whatever pace they are in their lane is pretty spectacular.
So, yeah.
But yeah, the RR series, we'll serpentine through Denver, Colorado in late July, Sonoma, California, up in wine country the next week, and then Seattle following. We're in Brainerd, Minnesota, our granddaddy of them all, over Labor Day weekend in Indianapolis, the U.S. Nationals, which is just a fantastic race. And for any drag racing or motorsports fan, that should certainly be on your bucket list. It's our Super Bowl for the NHRA drag racing, and I've had great success there. And renew my vows with that success there again.
Which is good, because there's some guys that go their whole career wanting to win that, and they just never do. It just eludes them. So
there's no guarantees in life, as we know. But that's one of them. The box is checked.
How many events is it?
24.
24 events.
Yeah.
It 26 at one time?
But now they go four wide.
They
can take two.
Hey, in pro stock, do you find it harder when you're going four wide to race from the two inside lanes than the outside lanes?
I don't think the inside lanes versus the outside lanes is more difficult than the other. Really it just comes down to the staging procedure. If one of the cars isn't staged properly in the proper time, the tree will fire, with no notice, so to speak.
Oh, really?
You kind of have your own little counter going in your head after you're the first person stages. You have 7 seconds for the other three to be staged, and automatically about 7 seconds after the first person stages, the tree's going to fire regardless.
So there's no staging battles, man. It's just going to go no matter what.
Yeah, it's pretty clean living. And what caught me off guard this past year was the fellow in lane four was just having trouble getting his car staged and actually had flickered the tree and then rolled clear through the beams. And I thought maybe his front end was tripping the lights, and they were going to come right back on. And I got off my sequence account, and I had the fastest car there, qualified number one, fastest car in the first round by a little bit, but obviously got beat on hole shots to two of the other three lanes. So that was all she wrote.
I mean, it's got to be dramatically
like a little frustrating, but also creates a little bit of excitement.
Well, yeah, it's cool.
The excitement comes A, for the fans without question, and B, from the discipline it takes from behind the wheel. And I say that with a grin, because obviously that took me off my game just this past spring when we did it. So we'll have two shots at this year, with both Bruton Smith facilities, two of his facilities having hosting a four wide event.
Do you have to take a little more care in the exit lane just to make sure everybody's not taking the same one?
Yeah, you do actually. that's probably the trickiest thing of all. You know,
that's what I was thinking,
the
yeah.
The NHRA has some folks down there to help keep everybody straight. But you know how hotheads can be sometimes if things didn't go their way.
Sometimes they don't
see what's going on. So, there's been some near misses. Fortunately, no contact.
So in your career racing, Jake, I mean, you've been really successful in pro stock. I mean, you know, that's a given. But if you were just saying, hey, I'm just going out for fun, is there, and maybe it is pro stock, but is there a type of racing, what class that you prefer the most?
I prefer bracket racing outside of the NHRA racing. Mm-hmm. And some of it is sanctioned NHRA racing. But, you know, the modern-day bracket racing coast-to-coast now is much like the poker tournaments you see on TV. You pay an entry fee, and there's so many entrants, and then the prize money is established based on that. And, you know, these races are $25,000, $50,000, $100,000, $250,000 purses. And I've done a lot of that in my career. That has always been my first love. So in recent past, in years where I've not raced full-time in the professional series, you know, that's where you'd find me, you know, competing against some of the greatest pure drivers in our sport. You know, are there, you know, folks that, you know, you may work across the table from in your occupation, you know, have a dragster or have an old body car that they take to their local track, and they're very proficient bracket racers and may even hit some of these big races. So that's where you'd likely find me. And, you know, I likely won't professional race my entire life. So, you know, that would be my go-to at that time.
Yeah. What's your daily driver back at home?
I drive a Wrangler, Jeep Wrangler.
Is it yellow?
It is not. No worries. I love the yellow. I certainly get my fill of it. It's a brilliant color. But no, it's a white, you know, Rubicon style Wrangler Unlimited. And we've had some fun with it. Not too much. Just cold air kit, some exhaust. You know, different running boards, wheels and tires. Yeah. Some LED.
You
got to
trick it out. You know a place where you get stuff like
I
that.
I do. Yeah. Fortunately, you know, I'm just a push button away from getting some great stuff out of that robotic equipment you talked about.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
come in late, punch in a few numbers, and it brings it to you.
You know, speaking of that, absolutely. As we start to wrap up, definitely check out Jegs.com. They ship over a million products to 100 countries around the world, and they do it with the utmost love and care that we appreciate. And I know I shop from them all the time. We appreciate that. And Brad used to, but he doesn't have a car project this year.
I've been busy. I have plenty of car projects. It's just getting back on them.
He's got warehouses of cars stashed around the country that are just all in pieces.
So time to get to work. Right?
Yes, it is.
Come
it's
on, Brad.
Very
get to
much
work.
Time.
And that's what's great about our company. You know, we're almost 60 years in life, and we've got so many tech salesmen that are on the telephones, and you know, we're trying to make our website as proficient as the human tech salespeople. But you know, any project you have, whether it's, you know, restoring a complete car or building a drag car or just replumbing your system, whatever the case may be, it's you know, we've got passionate tech folks that can answer any of your questions pretty much 24/7. So as you're ramping back into it,
Brad. I've had plenty of deliveries from Jegs.
Do you know how many Jeg stickers we have?
Yeah, I know. It's
we have a lot of Jeg stickers. So, of course, you guys know already, you know Jegs.com. Definitely go there. Do some shopping while you're there. But also check out TeamJegs.com, and that's where you can follow up on these guys and all of their racing and see kind of what they're doing and on the race team side of it. So that's a cool place to start as well. And links to all of their social media is on the TeamJegs.com website.
And we're going to post it too on our website and on our social media, which we've already started doing some of those on ours, leading up to this.
Yeah.
But where can they find us online?
So you can check us out at shiftandsteer.com, as usual. And we love that you guys listen to the shows and tell a friend, and it helps grow it. And all of our social media is at Shift Steer Media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all around. And constantly posting stuff up there as well. So hopefully you have some fun checking that out.
Where can they find you, Matt? I mean, not the bar down on the corner, but you know,
like right, like for lunch later today, or where?
Where can they find you online?
You know, at Moderator, always there. Moderator, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all at Moderator, and check that out.
Okay, and I'm Brad Fanshaw. Find me on Instagram, and it's Bond Speed Brad, and on Twitter, it's Brad Fanshaw. And you know what? I'll be back next week. I guarantee that. That's a promise, not a threat, okay?
Okay, great. So, I can't
and
wait.
Jake Coughlin Jr., Jigs, thanks for coming in today, man. It was cool.
It's my pleasure, man. It's great to be here in the studio. And
it's a great way to start out the racing season, you know? I mean, before it actually – before the – you know, the tire rubber's going up over Pomona. We actually got to talk some drag racing,
man. We got some sunshine out here in Orange County, and you've got your shorts on, and you're ready to go. Good luck this season. I'm very excited for you guys. I'm looking forward to great things. It's going to be fantastic.
And Woody, thanks for dragging him in. Yeah, he reluctantly was holding on to the door. Do I have to go in? And, you know, he kind of got him in the door. But, hey, everybody, thanks for listening to Shift and Steer. I'm Brad Fanshaw, right across from me.
I'm Matt, the Moderator, DeAndrea.
That's right. And big thanks to Jeg for coming in.
Hey, thank you. Hope all the listeners enjoyed.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. And you know what? Don't forget to watch the races on TV, NHRA, every week that they're running. And you can get the schedule at NHRA.com. And we'll be back next week.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.